Morning. Today's daf in Chagiga Chav Zayin. Means we're on the last daf of the Masechta. We are on Chav Vav Amud Aleph, at the very bottom, the last Mishnah, the very last Mishnah. Okay, the Chav Vav Amud Aleph had a whole series of Mishnayos. We are all the way on the bottom between Musaf and Mincha yesterday. So Baruch Hashem, we were able to cover a lot of ground. We got through the Chumras of Truma over that of Kodesh. And now we are talking about Taharas HaZara, purification of the Azara. So now Yom Tov is over. How apropos we're speaking about this on Motzei Yom Kippur, although it would be more appropriate if we spoke about it on Motzei Sukkos. But we're talking now where Yom Tov is over, and you had all the Amei Haaretz in the Azara. Now when we say Amei Haaretz, we mean even the Kohanim, meaning the assumption is that not only was there Amei Haaretz amongst the Israelim, but also amongst Kohanim as well. And as they approach the Azara on Yantif, so what do we do over the course of Yantif? We basically close our eyes. We don't do any type of classification. Oh, you're an Am Haaretz, you're Tame, you're not an Am Haaretz, you're fine. We do none of the such, and we allow everyone entree into the Azara. So, but after Yantif is over, so then literally the party's over, and okay, now basically we take stock. And the fact of the matter is that there were Amei Haaretz in the Azara on Yantif, and they were handling things. So now it's time to clean everything up. And when we say clean up, we mean in this case, Tumah Tahara. I know it's so interesting. In other words, over Yantif itself, we were able to totally ignore the Tumas Amei Haaretz, and then when Yantif is over, we no longer can ignore it. Meaning we have to recognize and realize that there are Amei Haaretz coming in and handling everything. Okay, so it's halachically how this works. It's interesting. It's interesting. Look, as we pointed out already a number of times, the Tumas Amei Haaretz is a Tumah Derabanan. So there's flexibility in a Tumah that's a Tumah Derabanan. But the idea that we can, for 7 days, ignore it and then afterwards no longer ignore it and go back and revisit those same 7 days and realize that they were Amei Haaretz, okay, it's just interesting. It's an interesting halachic phenomena. In the meantime, however, the final Mishnah on Chavav Amud Aleph, Ketzam Avrim Al Taharas Azara. So how do we literally go over the Azara, the purification of the Azara? Or to simply put it, how are we Matahir? So Matbil Asa Kelim Shebe Mikdash. So the Mishnah gives a very simple instruction, and that is, take all the Kelim, the Beis HaMikdash, and Tovel, and put them in the Mikvah. V'omrim Lahem, and we say to them, Rashi says, take a look at Rashi on the bottom of the Amud, Kohanim Amei Haaretz Berego. So on Yantav, we say to the Kohanim, look, usually you're an Amei Haaretz, usually you don't come in here. But it's Yantav, so everyone's coming in. But do us a small favor. Don't touch the Shulchan. Right? You see, usually that's an invitation to touch. Don't touch the Shulchan, leave the Shulchan alone. So the Omrim Lahem Yizaru Shelo Yeshelo Tigo B'Shulchan, do not touch the Shulchan. The Shulchan, that's going to be the Gemara's discussion of whether or not the Shulchan can or cannot become Tame, so stay tuned.
But are those part of the people that's their Mishmar?
The Amei Haaretz, in terms of who exactly they are unclear. But remember, though, on Yantiv, all the Mishmars come to the Beis HaMikdash. So there is no, in terms of Mishmaros, there's no one Mishmar specified for Yantiv. So really, it's an open invitation for all Kohanim to come. So again, the only instruction to the Kohanim Amei Haaretz is don't touch the Shulchan. And then the Mishnah goes on, Kol HaKelim Shehayu B'Mikdash Yesh Lahem Shneim U'Shlishim. In terms of the Kelim in the Beis HaMikdash, there were second and there were third, meaning there was a replacement. So for every Kli in the Beis HaMikdash, so that in the event that one Kli becomes Tameh, good. So bring in another Kli, and it will replace it. She'im nitmu avishom yavu yishneim tachtem. Kol HaKelim Shehayu B'Mikdash Te'unim Tevila, and every Kli in the Beis HaMikdash required Tevila, meaning every Kli is susceptible to Tumah, and therefore, if becomes Tameh, it then is going to require a Tevila and a Mikvah. Chutz mi-Mizbech HaZav v'Mizbech HaNechoshes, and the two exceptions are the Mizbech HaZav, the golden Mizbech, and the Mizbech HaNechoshes, and the copper Mizbech, Mimnei She'in Kekarka, they are grounded, Divrei Rabbi Elazar v'Chachamim Omrim, Mimnei She'in Metzupin, the Chachamim say no, because they are plated. Okay, the Chachamim's position, because they are plated, we're going to discuss that in the Gemara. That's going to be a big topic of today. Short.
Even if they're not plated, if they're wood underneath.
Okay, that's going to be another topic of the Gemara that's coming up as well. Okay, so in this Mishnah, the final Mishnah of the Masechta, basically the idea behind cleanup after Yontif. Yontif is over. The Kohanim Amei Haaretz were in the Azara. They were handling everything. Everything became Tameh. Again, during Yontif, we just cover our eyes, ignore it. But after Yontif, we know what happened. Everything became Tameh, and therefore we tovel everything. And the only thing that does not need Tefillah are only the Mizbech. The Mizbech Azav, that's the golden Mizbech, that's the one in the Azara. That's the one where we burn Ketores daily. And on Yom Kippur, I know we just saw yesterday on Yom Kippur, we went through the Avodah. So on Yom Kippur, it becomes a big part of the Avodah Yom Kippurim, where the blood of the Par and the Seir are sprinkled on the Mizbech HaZahav, on the four corners of the Mizbech HaZahav, and on the top of the Mizbech HaZahav as well. And remember yesterday, Achas, Achas, Achas. So the Mizbech HaNechoshes, that's the copper Mizbech, so that also goes by the name of Mizbech HaAdama. The Mizbech with the... literally Mizbech of the ground. But basically it's a Mizbech that's outside, that's in the Azara, and that's where all the Karbanos are offered. All. So on Yontif, so the Amei Haaretz are going into the Azara. Now you're right, meaning generally
it has to be quarantined for 7 days even before he even goes there.
No, that's for Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's entering
but
the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
Right?
But the Mizbech Azav is not in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Mizbech Azav is just in the Azara. But you're right in the sense that generally Kohanim are not invited into the Azara. In other words, you have to go into the Azara with a purpose, but okay. The assumption is that on Yom Tov.
But that's Kodesh HaKadoshim,
no? Kodesh HaKadoshim is this area right here. Right? This area is just simply...
But I mean, even that area, Heichal...
No, Kohanim... But they're not... In other words, here, there's a prohibition for anyone to go in.
Right.
And the only one that can go in is the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur and with the Anana Ketores, with the cloud of Ketores. That's Kodesh Kadasha. In the area of Kodesh, otherwise known as the Heichal, so you're right, I agree. Generally speaking, Kohanim were not invited to go in there, but there was no prohibition as much as the Kodesh Kadasha. Okay, Tana, we learned in the Braisa. He's Zarushem Atikah B'Shulchan V'Menorah. Okay. Our Mishnah has the warning going to the Amei Haaretz Kohanim as follows. Our Mishnah says to the, we go over to the Kohanim, we point our fingers at them and say, do not touch the Shulchan. Period. Now that means, we're going to discuss this in just a moment, that the Shulchan is susceptible to Tumah, obviously. If they touch it, the Shulchan becomes Tameh, and then we're going to have to go through the
shulchan,
process.
Huh?
Which one are you talking about right now? The Shulchan.
Okay.
The Shulchan on the north side. So the Braisa says that the warning to the Kohen is not just limited to the Shulchan, but also to the menorah as well. Meaning, don't touch the Shulchan, don't touch the menorah. So now basically what we have is a machlok between Amish and the Braisa in terms of whether or not the menorah is susceptible to Tumah. So again, Amish says the table is susceptible to Tumah, and we tell the Kohen, don't touch it. I know you never come in here anyway, but now you're in here, and it's exciting. But don't touch it again. Mizbech Azav is not susceptible to Tumah at all. Then the Shulchan is susceptible to Tumah, so the Mishnah says we warn them not to touch it. The Braisa adds the menorah to the list. The Braisa says we also tell them not to touch the menorah. And so now what we have is a basic machlokes between the Mishnah and the Braisa, whether or not the menorah itself is susceptible to Tumah. V'tani demai tamah lo tani menorah, Shulchan k'si beitamid, menorah lo k'si beitamid. Okay, so the Gemara says as follows. Look, by the way, I misspoke, I was wrong, let me just correct myself. They're both susceptible to Tumah, both the menorah and the Shulchan, they're both Kalim. The difference between the Shulchan and the menorah, explains the Gemara, is that by the Shulchan you have a halachic requirement of Tamid. Meaning, the Shulchan has to always be there in the Azara. Right? The bread has to be on the table constantly, day and night. And so therefore, the Shulchan is susceptible to Tumah. If the Kohen Amaretz touches it, we are going to have to tovel the mikvah. And you know what the problem is? We're gonna lose our mitzvah of tamid because it always has to be there. By menorah, okay, the menorah. If the menorah becomes tamid, if the Amei Haaretz Kohen touches the menorah now is tamid, and we're gonna have to take it out. But that's fine because there's no requirement of tamid. Now listen to what we just said. We just said that regarding the menorah, there's no requirement of tamid. Really? Isn't by the menorah? Isn't the idea of near tamid, right? And right? Then every shul has a minog of having a light over the Aron, right? Going back to the idea of the Beis Hamikdash where there was an Ner Tamid. So how can the Gemara just got done saying that by the menorah there's no requirement of Tamid? So if it becomes Tamid, okay, so we'll take the menorah out, we'll tell them the mikvah. Really? So take a look at Rashi. Rashi is bothered by this question. Such a basic question. So you take a look at the first Rashi on the Gemara. Menorah lo ksibei Tamid. Klomar, Rashi already, he doesn't even bother asking the question. He knows the question is self-evident. Of course there's a Tamid requirement by menorah. How can the Gemara say there's no Tamid requirement? Klomar, Hatamidim amur b'menorah lo tamid yom avalayla kamar. It's true, of course, it says tamid by the menorah, but that's not day and night tamid. Meaning, by the shulchan, it's a day and night tamid. By menorah, it's not a day and night tamid. Rashi goes on to say, ala tamid milayla layla ketamid amur ba'olas tamid uvechavite kohen gadol. Tamid by menorah just simply means constant, like the tamid shel shachar. Like the chavitim of the Kohen Gadol, meaning that we're going to daily. That's what tamid means by the menorah, but it doesn't mean that it's lit all day. In fact, it's not lit during the day. Rashi, yes, that's correct. Rashi's of the opinion that the menorah is lit only during the night, not during the day. Look, the Torah says that you light it from evening until morning. Tein la midas hashemen sheish ba kedeli dalek me'ervad boker. So you only light it from evening until morning. Therefore, Rashi says that, the whole day, the balance of the day, you pick it up, you take it out of the azara, and you tov on the mikvah. But the tamid, as it relates to the shulchan, that's day and night. Because from 1 week to the next, the bread is on top of it, and the bread doesn't take a break from sitting on top of the shulchan, so that tamid is day and night tamid, as opposed to the menorah, which is only night, not day. Rashi's position over here, he says it a couple times throughout Shas, he's very consistent, and that is that the mitzvah to light the menorah is only during the night, and not during the day. That's Rashi's opinion. Rambam, Ben remembers, we went over this a couple of times, Rambam's position is no. The Rambam says that the menorah is lit both during the day and during the night. And not only is that the Rambam, but Tosos as well. Tosos right here on the Samud, second Tosos, not exactly as clearly as the Rambam, right? A difference could be drawn between Tosos and the Rambam, but Tosos also is bothered by Rashi's position over here that the menorah was only lit during the night and not during the day.
The story of Hanukkah also supports Rambam, and it was supposed to be for 24, and that was 7 days. It wasn't 12 hours.
Okay. Fair. I mean, you could argue. You could say that it was 8 days of eight night periods. But either way, okay, fine. Look, it's a machlokas. It's one of the classic machlokasim that exists in terms of the mitzvah of lighting the lighting of the menorah.
And Rabbi, how many people would pick up that menorah?
It would be right. It would be a challenge. But okay, it's a challenge. But but it is susceptible to tumah. Good. So now we've supported our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says the menorah, if it becomes tamei, fine, we'll just pick it up, we'll take it out, fine. The shulchan, if it becomes tamei, and it can, if it becomes tamei, we're going to have to pick it up, we're going to take it out, and we're going to lose our mitzvah of tamid. Okay, that is that's the difference between shulchan and menorah. That explains our Mishnah. Now let's go back to the Braisa, because the Braisa says that the warning to the Kohen Am Haaretz in the Azara was, you see the shulchan, don't touch it. You see the menorah, don't touch it. So how are we going to defend the braisa? So the Gemara says, "Loksi beit tamid." The idach kem dechsiv. So the menorah nochach hashulchan keman dechsiv beit tamid dami. So the Gemara says, "Well, the menorah is opposite the shulchan. That's what the Torah says. You place the menorah opposite the shulchan. Shulchan's in the north, menorah's in the south. So and the fact that it's the Torah says, "Es a menorah nochach hashulchan." The menorah is opposite the shulchan. It's not just a geographic location, but it's also a comparison. Just like by the shulchan, there's a halach of tamid, so too by the menorah is a halach of tamid. It's as if the Torah actually written it. And the other position, meaning our Mishnah says no. It's just a geographic location. It's just telling us that the placement of the menorah is geographically going to be opposite the shulchan. Shulchan's in the north, and the menorah will be parallel to it in the south. Fine. So basic machlokas now between Mishnah and the Braisa and the Gemara, an analysis of the machlokas is a function of whether or not there's a tamid requirement by the menorah. We know there's a tamid requirement by the Shulchan, as Rashi explains, a day-night tamid requirement, not just daily, but constantly, but as opposed to the menorah. The menorah is only a once a day or one time a day requirement. But by the menorah, you could take it out. That's our Mishnah's position. And the Braisa says, no, just like by the Shulchan, there is a constant tamid requirement, so too by the menorah as well. But typically, the Kli Yitzasul and Achasu. Now the Gemara is bothered by the idea that the Shulchan is susceptible to Tumah. Really? The Shulchan should not be susceptible to Tumah. Why? Because it's a Kli Yitzasul and Achas, because it is a large wooden vessel that we put it down and we're not going anywhere with it. And it's going to stay put, and it's not moving. And anytime you have a large wooden box that you put down and with no intent and no plans of moving it, it's no longer susceptible to Tumah. Now, this should sound familiar. It's not that long ago in Moed, in Seder Moed, that we did this. We did this in the Gemara Megillah. If I remember correctly, hopefully I do, it's in the fourth parak of Megillah, where the Gemara over there discussed a scenario in which there was a dead person in one room. In an adjoining area, they wanted a daven. And the Kohanim were there, wanted to daven. And basically, they wanted to try to create a barrier that separated one room from the next. And they took the Aron, and they basically moved the Aron between the two rooms so that the Aron could serve as a barrier. Now, the Aron can only serve... Now, I know it's not a nice way to use the Aron as basically a barrier between two rooms. But the argument the Gemara Megillah over there tried to use is that, well, because the Aron is never moved, even though they were about to move it, because the Aron was never moved, so therefore the Aron is impervious to Tumah, and anything which is in a Makabel Tumah is also going to be a Chatzitza, also will serve as a barrier separating one room from the next room. Okay, so the same idea that we're going over here in the Gemara, we went over at the end of Masechta Megillah. So the Gemara says, "V'tepikle dekli etzasul anachas v'chol kli etzasul anachas lo mitaime my taima." And then the Gemara just gives an explanation of why that should be. It's dumya desak, because the Torah's model case of a kli that's susceptible to tumah is sak, which is beinan masak mitatam ale v'rekan afkli mitatam ale v'rekan. Just like a sak is moved and transported both when it's full and when it's empty. So the same thing is true regarding any kli. Any kli which is moved while it's both empty and full is susceptible to tumah. But if the kli has no design of being moved, so then it's not susceptible to tumah. So the Gemara is bothered by the fact now that the Shulchan is susceptible to tumah. That's the assumption that we're going into this whole discussion. That's what the Mishnah says. That's what the Braisa says. But why? The Shulchan is an item that's not moved. So the Gemara says, "Hainami mitalta amale v'rekanhu." So the Gemara says, "Well, the assumption is wrong. The Shulchan is never moved. That's not true. The Shulchan is moved." Another line that comes up in the Gemara a number of times: "Get a Reish Lakish, Amar Reish Lakish, my dechsev al Shulchan atahor mechlal shu tameh." So Reish Lakish first quotes a pasuk in Vayikra, Parshas Amor. It says, "A Shulchan atahor, the pure Shulchan." What does that mean, Shulchan atahor? Meaning it could become tameh, and that's why the Torah has to go out of its way and say that the Shulchan atahor. So the Einam Makabel Tumah. So the Gemara says, but again, let's go back to that previous argument. Once we put it down, don't we have plans of never moving it? The Gemara says that's not true. It's sometimes moved. So the Einam Makabel. I'm sorry. Kliyat Asul Anachasu. The Einam Makabel Tumah. El Melam Ishim Magmin Oso Omarim Bo Laole Regalim. So the Gemara says it's simply not true. The Shulchan is moved. The Shulchan, in fact, is put on display. On Yontif, what happens is that the Kohanim pick up the Shulchan, take it out of the Azara, and show it off to the Olei Regalim. Not just to show off, that's obviously wouldn't be the point. Point is to show the Jewish people Kadosh Baruch Hu's love for the Jewish people. And meanwhile, what's on the table? Not just bread, fresh bread. Fresh bread that was a week old. So the Gemara says, "Amar bo lola regalim lechem apanim v'omrim lam ru'u chibaschem lefnei amakom." See how much the Kadosh Baruch Hu loves you. See luko kisiduro. Right? We're going to take it off the Shulchan, and it's going to come off the same way that it was put on. Fresh, warm, soft. That's how it was put on. How is it coming off a week later? Fresh, warm, and soft. The Shulchan is able to preserve the Shulchan. Kadosh Baruch Hu is able to preserve the bread so that it's fresh, warm, and soft. Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi Neskadah Nasa Belachem Apanim Kisidur Kach Siluko. Gemara quotes the statement by Rav Yeshua ben Levi Neskadah. He refers to it as a big miracle that the bread remained fresh for a week. Shenamar La Som Lechem Chom Biyom Hilak Chol. Pasuk in Shmuel describes the bread as Lechem Chom, hot bread, on the day that I take it, even though I'm taking it a week later after it was put on. Okay, so basically now that ends that sequence in the Gemara. Gemara's question was, is the Shulchan really susceptible to Tumah? Answer is, yes. Shulchan is susceptible to Tumah. Isn't the criteria of a Kli, in order for susceptibility to be a Kli that is both carried when it's both empty and it's full, and who's carrying the Shulchan with bread on the table? Answer is, it's done. It's done for the purpose of showing the Olei Regalim the bread, the fresh bread on the table. So it's carried both when it's empty and when it's full, and therefore it's susceptible to Tumah. Period. Ad kan. That takes us to the end of that sequence. Next. The Gemara now is bothered by a new question. The bread is made out of wood. Fine. They're right. Thank you. The effects of the fast are still with me, but the table is made out of wood. At the same time, the table is also plated gold. Everything in the base of Mikdash looks beautiful. Gold is the metal of choice in the base of Mikdash. In the Azara, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, by the way, the entire interior wall is plated with gold. And the Shulchan is made out of wood, but then plated with gold. And now the Gemara wants to know how, when we're discussing the tumah susceptibility of the Shulchan, why are we ignoring the fact that it's plated with gold? And as Rashi here points out, if it's plated with gold, then that's not an if. It is plated with gold. So that means then, in terms of the rules of tumah tahara, we don't even have to engage in this whole discussion of the gumya desak, nita male verekan. It has to be just like a sack. It has to be carried both empty and full. When it comes to metal kalim, there's no such criteria. That criteria only exists when it comes to wood. And clothing and sacks. But when it comes to metal, there just simply is no criteria like that. So now the question is very simple. Just argue that the Shulchan is Tameh by virtue of the fact that it's plated. And the Gemara says, V'tepeklem b'shem tzipoy, did not. We learned in the Mishnah, Shulchan v'hadulavki, shenivchusu o'shechipon b'shayish v'shayir b'am malkam anachas koso is Tameh. Now, the Mishnah over here in Kalim, 22nd parak of Kalim. The Mishnah in Kalim describes the following scenario. You have a table or a dulpaki. Rashi describes it as basically a folding chair with like a leather cushion. So in this scenario, the Mishnah describes nivchesu o shechipan b'shayish. One of two things happens. Either number one, it basically collapsed. Okay, we know basic rule regarding kalim. Anytime the kli collapses, it basically falls apart, so it's no longer susceptible to tumah. Or the other scenario is I layered it with marble. Okay, now I don't know enough about these things to explain how the table is layered with marble, but okay, a thin layer of marble goes around the table. Here's what we know. Marble, as is any stone, is impervious to tumah. And so therefore, basically what the Mishnah Kalim is telling us is that if I take a layer of marble and plate it around the table and basically line the table with this marble, the table will no longer become Tameh. Meaning the plating will identify it as what it is. It will define it. It is no longer a wooden table. As long as there is a layer of marble around the table, that is considered now a marble table. And a marble, like any stone, is impervious to tumah. It is simply not susceptible to tumah. And that's what the Mishnah's Kalim is telling us. And then Rashi basically says, so if that's true in terms of removing the tumah, it would be equally true in terms of introducing it to tumah. Meaning that if I have a wooden table, but I play it with gold, so then the gold becomes now the defining characteristic of the table. Meaning we no longer look at it as a wooden table. We should be looking at it as a gold table. This is the Gemara's question. Now, going back to the Mishnah and Kalim, the Mishnah and Kalim is a little bit detail-oriented. So we're going to go, but I basically spelled out the question. Let's go back to the Mishnah in Kelma. I'm going to explain the Mishnah with its details. So, Ashokhan Adofiki, if I have a table or a folding chair, Shinifchasu, if it collapses, oh, Shechipam Bishayish, or I layered it with marble, Vishayir Ben Malkam Anachas Kostos. But I didn't totally layer the top with marble. I left room on the top for cups, Tame. Because I left room on it for cups, meaning I didn't cover the entire surface area of the table, I left some of the wood exposed, so we could still view it as a wooden table. But if I were, this is the obvious, clear implication of the Mishnah and Kalim, if I were to layer the entire surface area with marble, it now becomes a marble table, it's not a wood table. So now that's the question has been presented. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Makam Anachas HaChatichos, and Rabbi Yehuda says that it's not enough to leave enough space for the cups, but you have to leave space for, Rashi points out, the bread and the meat. And if you don't, it's just simply not going to, it doesn't define itself as a table. Either way, the point that we're learning from the Mishnah of Kalim is that once I plate something, once I layer something, the top layer is what defines it in terms of Tum and Tahara. The Gemara says, well, maybe you want to create the following argument. Maybe in general you're right. The top layer of whatever item it is the defining layer and what defines the kli. But maybe by the shulchan in the Beis HaMikdash, it's made of atzei shittim. Cedar wood, very important, very significant. And maybe despite the fact that we played with gold, the atzei shittim being so chashiv is not going to be mevutal. It won't be nullified. It will not lose its identity. This is the Gemara's counter argument. So the Gemara says, well, that counter argument only works if you subscribe to Reish Lakish's viewpoint. Reish Lakish, in that Mishnah Kilm that we just learned, says, you know, when I layer it with marble, so it will lose its identity. But Reish Lakish says that's only if the underlying material is a cheaper material. Now, don't ask me to define what these things are. Achsalagim, I don't know, but I don't know what it is. But I understand the basic point of the Gemara. It's a cheaper material, and that's why the layer on the top is going to define it. But Reish Lakish says if what is underneath the marble layer is a significant wood, so then the marble layer will not redefine the table. It will be, the table will be viewed as what lays below the marble. And according to Reish Lakish, we could make the same argument by the Shulchan and the Beis HaMikdash. Atzei shittim, cedar wood, so important, so significant. So even though the Shulchan is layered with gold, but the gold is not going to redefine it. That's the Gemara says, that would work for Reish Lakish. But the Gemara says, but that's only if you work. That's only if you subscribe to Reish Lakish's viewpoint. But Rav Yochanan disagrees. Rav Yochanan says that the top layer is always going to define what the kli is, despite what's underneath the top layer. The top layer is always the identity of the kli, and that means that according to Rav Yochanan, back to square one, we are now in the middle of now asking a question, a very simple question. The Shulchan and the Beis HaMikdash should not be considered wood, it should be considered metal. And metal does not have these criteria of Kli Eitz, Asui Lanachas, it's metal. And therefore should be simply susceptible to Tumah. Period. And according to Rav Yochanan, why then did we engage in this whole discussion of, well, we pick it up, we show it to the people, it's a metal table. And according to Rav Yochanan, the plating on the surface always will define what it is. So the Gemara says, "Afil b'klim esamim nami b'alam ayikal member." V'chitem akam b'tzipui omeid, kam b'tzipui she'en omeid. So the Gemara says, "Well, again, maybe we could try to make a distinction between the quality of the tzipui, the quality of the plating." So the Gemara says, "Abay minay Reish Lakish mei Rav Yochanan." But the Gemara says that there was another discussion between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. B'tzipui amar, b'tzipui she'en omeid. Is it the plating can stand on its own or it cannot stand on its own? And when we say that the planing is going to redefine the kli, does it mean that it has to cover all surface area, the top and the sides, or it only has to cover the top? V'amrle lo shna b'tzipur yamer v'lo shna b'tzipur shein omle. Lo shna b'chofes avaz v'zav v'lo shna b'shein chofes avaz v'zav. And Rav Yochanan's response to his brother-in-law, Reish Lakish, is, it does not matter. The surface layer will always redefine the kli, regardless of whether or not it could stand on stone or cannot stand on stone. Whether or not it covers the entire surface area or it just covers the top. It doesn't matter. In all those circumstances, the top layer will define the kli. So, with all that said and done, and if we're holding the Rav Yochanan, the question on the table is very simple. And I mean that both literally and figuratively over here. The question is, the table should be considered metal, period. And if the table should be considered metal, so then it's susceptible to tumah with no discussion. No discussion of male verekan, dumya desak. None of that discussion should occur because, quite frankly, it's just simply a metal table. According to Rav Yochanan, the plating is what defines the kli. That's the question. The Gemara treats them all as metal. And from a halachic standpoint, it's the same.
This is the same rules as the sukkah.
In terms of the top of the sukkah, right, the schach has to be something which is an enu makabel tumah. So metal's out of the question.
And so that's why you cover the wood.
Right, correct. In other words, that's the issue of mamid. Okay, good, very good. So the Gemara says, Elishani shulchan derechmana karya eitz. So the Gemara says, okay, generally in the world of tumah tahara, the Gemara says, agreed. But nevertheless, when it comes to the Shulchan, the Pasuk in Yecheskel describes it as wood, and so therefore wood is the characteristic of the Shulchan. Meaning generally in the world of Kalim, this is basically the Gemara is saying exception to the rule. Generally in the world of Kalim, plating will define it. The top layer will define it. But the Shulchan, the base of Mikdash, since the Navi refers to it as eitz, so therefore, it is viewed as wood. Dechsiv ha-mizbech eitz, shalosh amos gavo, v'arko shlaim amos, v'mikatzorosav lo, v'arko v'kirosav eitz. Okay, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk in Yecheskel calls it wood, and that is why we view it as wood. That's why we have to go back to the previous discussion in the Gemara, and to which the Gemara said, how come the Shulchan is Tameh? It's not carried both empty and full. And that's why the Gemara had to answer, it is carried empty and full. And we had to go through that entire discourse because even though the gold plating on the Shulchan, it's not considered gold, it's considered wood. As long as we're here in Yecheskel, in the 41st parak of Yecheskel, the Gemara quotes the end of the Pasuk, Vayidaber Elai Zeh Shulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem. Okay, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, this is the Shulchan before Hashem. So the Gemara says, you know, if you look at that Pasuk, go from the beginning of the Pasuk to the end. The beginning of the Pasuk, we were talking about the Mizbeach. And then seamlessly transitioning into the Shulchan. How do you start with the discussion of the Mizbeach and then move to the Shulchan? That's exactly the Gemara's question. So here, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish agree, even though they've been disagreeing for the last 20 lines of Gemara. When the Beis HaMikdash was around, so what provided Kapara was a Mizbeach. But now, Achshav Shulchano Shal Adam Mechaper Alav. But now, what provides you your kapara? Provides your kapara is your shulchan. Your table now is going to provide your shulchan in the absence of the Beis Hamikdash and the Mizbech. Two words of Rashi. What does that mean? That your table provides kapara? Hachnasas Orchin. Rashi says you invite guests into your house, so that's going to be your kapara. That will provide an atonement for you. Tosus over here, top tosus on the Amud. Galdu koach alagima, kidisa bagaz chelak. Feeding other people is such a huge mitzvah that will provide the kapara that once was provided by the Beis HaMikdash. Continuing in the Gemara, kol hakelim shem HaMikdash yeshlem shniyim. Everything's got replacements. Second replacement, third replacement. Mizbech nechoshes dechsev and vechulei. Okay, and then the only two Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash that are impervious to Tumah, simply not susceptible to Tumah, is the two Mizbechos. The one in the Heichal, that's the Mizbech HaZav, and the one outside, which the Mishnah refers to as Mizbech HaNechoshes. So the Gemara goes on to explain, Mizbech HaNechoshes Dichsiv Mizbech HaAdama Ta'aseli. So the Mizbech HaNechoshes also goes by the name Mizbech HaAdama. Okay, it's grounded. In fact, it's so grounded, the Torah actually describes it as ground. So we know that in the world of Tumah and Tahara, anything that's grounded is not susceptible to Tumah. Okay. Sometimes it's so hard to describe Tumah and Tahara, meaning we don't see it, it doesn't It doesn't hit any of our senses. So, you know, I said, although electricity does hit some of our senses, especially if you put your finger right in the socket, but it's a little bit like electricity, meaning that it's there. It doesn't hit any of your senses. So and in the analogy, it's just an analogy. It's nothing to get excited about. But in the analogy, when something is grounded, so basically it directs the electricity right down. So here, by Tumah Tahara, if something is grounded, it's connected to the ground, it's not susceptible to Tumah. A house is not susceptible to Tumah. Now, mind you, by the way, right? It's sometimes an erroneous thought regarding a house. What do you mean a house is not Tumah? What about mace? Yeah, when the house is a conduit for Tumah, but the house itself will never become Tumah. Meaning, if there's a mace in the house, so what's going to happen is that the Tumah's mace is going to go up, hit the roof, and drop back down again. But the house itself, so that means that any of the kalim inside the house will become Tumah. But the house itself will not become Tumah. Okay, Tsaras is right. Tsaras is
an exception.
No, he's right. So the house can become Tumah with Tsaras. But again, you take the stone, in other words, the stone becomes Tumah. You take the stone house stone out, you replace it with a new stone, and your house is good. So the Tumah is only a function of the Tsaras, but the house doesn't become Tumah. If the Tsaras comes again, you have to take apart the house. But generally speaking, something that's grounded, right, something that's grounded is not susceptible to Tumah. Okay, so the Mizbech and Nechoshes is Mizbech Adama. It's synonymous. That's why the outer Mizbech is not susceptible to Tumah. What about the inner one? Mizbech Hazav, Dechsev, Amenorva, Mizbechos. Etkish, Mizbechos, Lezeh. So the Hekish, meaning when the Torah describes Mizbech, the Torah says Mizbechos. So it equates the Mizbech, the interior and the exterior Mizbech. And so just like we know that the exterior Mizbech is not susceptible to Tumah because it's Adama, so to the interior Mizbech, you could have made an argument, hey, it's susceptible to Tumah, so, but because it's transportable. But again, the Hekish tells us that no, the interior Mizbech as well is not susceptible to Tumah.
So can't you make the same argument for the Menorah? Because it talks about it together with the
Right,
Menorah.
Right. It's a great question. Because in that pasuk we just quoted, it also has the Menorah as well. Okay, great question. I don't know. The Gemara only views the Hekesh from the standpoint of Mizbechos, the fact that it says it in the plural, not in the singular. Okay, good. Very good question. I don't have an answer off the top of my head. Tosfos is bothered. Where is it? Somewhere around. Okay, I'll find it. Anyway, Tosos bothered by the fact that in the Midbar everything was movable, everything was transportable, right? They picked everything up and they moved it in the Midbar. Yeah, it's all the way back. Okay, third Tosos on Chavav Amud Beis. So, but Tosos says, when you're picking everything up, in other words, it's like moving your house. When you're picking everything up and moving, that's not called transportable. That's just simply called moving. Right, you take a look at the Yeshama de Lomahani Tiltala Kevin de Lohaitham to tell us Levada ki im bahadishar kalim. So Tosa says that doesn't define itself as something which is transported. Okay, anyway, back to our Gemara. Okay, finishing up. Vechachamim omrim ibn shem mitzupim. Okay. How did that last dialogue in the Mishnah go? Again, the Mishnah says that you would tovel all the kalim in the Mesa Mikdash after Yontif. You would tell the Amei Aretz during Yantav not to touch the Shulchan. Every kli is susceptible to Tumah except for the Mizbeach, Hazav, and except for the Mizbeach and the Choshes because they're grounded. And the Chachamim say no because they're plated. Mimnei Sheim Mitzupin. That's a strange argument. If anything, what is that argument telling us? Not that it's not susceptible to Tumah. The plating, the gold plating, would tell us that it is susceptible to Tumah. How are we supposed to understand the exchange between the Chachamim and Rabbi Elazar in the Mishnah? Gemara is bothered by that very question. So Adarabba, Gemara asks very simply, the argument of plating, of gold plating, takes us in the exact opposite direction. Kevin de Mitzupin, Inu Mitamu. I don't understand. If it's plated, it's susceptible to Tumah. So what kind of argument was the Chachamim making? Oh, don't worry about the gold Mizbeach. Oh, it's plated with gold. Huh? because it's plated with gold, therefore it is susceptible to tuma. So, suggestion number one of the Gemara is that we're going to do a little bit of editing in the Mishnah. Or not editing, but, well, you know what the Chachamim are arguing? That the gold in Mizbeach is susceptible to tuma, exactly for the reason because it's plated with gold. Okay, that's number one. Which would then mean then that what about the Hekesh we just learned? I don't know. Meaning the Chachamim don't learn the Hekesh? Okay. That's possibility number one. Ibai Semer Rabban La Rabban Lazar Kamre, or maybe no. Maybe the Chachamim over here were not really giving their own opinion. They were just responding to Rabban Lazar's position. My day tech mishum de mitzupim. Mivato bato tzipuyav gabayu. So what do you think? You think that the inner mizbeach should be susceptible to tumah because of the tzipui of the plating? The plating, the gold plating is mevutal. It is nullified legabe the mizbeach. And so again, why should that be? Rashi over here says, go back to the Gemara that we saw earlier. Because the Torah describes as eights. And because the Torah describes as eights, so therefore, again, normally, like the Mishnah in Kalim taught us earlier this morning, normally the plating of an item, the top layer defines the item, but in the Beis HaMikdash, so the Shochan is an exception to the rule, and now what we're learning in the Gemara is that the Mizbech Hazav is also an exception to the rule. Okay, and finally, finishing up the Perek. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Elazar, Tamid HaChachamim. Again, the fact that they're not Mekabel Toma is accepted view. Why it's not Mekabel Toma? So either because of the Hekesh, or because it's because of the Pasuk in Yechezkel. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Elazar, Tamid HaChachamim, Ein Ur Shel Gehenim Sholatis Bahem. The Rav Elazar says that for Tamid HaChachamim, the fires of Gehenim do not affect them. Kavachomer misalamandra. And the Kavachomer will make an argument based on the salamander. Now, I say salamander, okay, we're talking about a creature. What the creature is, the identity of the creature, you know that's not my forte. There is a Tosus over here that Tosus describes it as one of the Shmona Shratzim, one of the eight creatures that when they die are susceptible to tumah. The Torah tells us in Vayikra that there are eight Shratzim, okay, no good translation, things that are low to the ground. Right, bugs and snakes and lizards and frogs. Okay, so anyway, all right. In our current nomenclature, we don't have a category for that. But anyway, but in the world of Shrusim, eight of them, when they die, are a source of tuma. Okay, the what we generally refer to as tuma sheretz. So Rashi describes that this salamander that we're describing is one of them. Either way. So Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Elazar, I'm sorry. Oma salamandra shetoladus eshi. It is formed out of fire. Don't ask me to explain what the Gemara means by that. I don't know. But in the meantime, however, the Gemara views this creature as a creature that comes from the fire. Hasach mi dama einor shalotus ba. But the Gemara says that if you take the blood of such an animal and you rub the blood on your skin, it's great for preventing the fire from affecting you. Meaning if we could identify this animal, if we could find this animal, firemen would love it. They would take the blood of this salamander, and they would before going into the burning house, they'd rub it on the skin and it would protect them from the fire. Tamidei chachamim shekol gufan eish. Now the Talmid Chacham is his entire body is the composite of fire. Dechsev alo kod devari ke'esh nam Hashem. Pasuk Yirmiyahu describes the dvar Hashem as being eish. It's fire. So the Talmid Chacham, who is imbued with Torah. So basically, he is Eish. Alachas kama v'chama. So therefore, if the blood of the salamander can protect one from the fire, imagine a Talmid Chacham who has learned all that Torah. Imagine how he's going to be protected from the fires of Gehenna. Amar Yish Lakish Ein Or Shel Gehenim Shalatus BePoshei Yisrael. So the Or Shel Gehenim will not affect Poshei Yisrael. Meaning, even the sinners of the Jewish people will be protected from the Or Shel Gehenim. Kavachomer mimizbech hazav. And the Gemara says, and look at the mizbech hazav, ma mizbech hazav shein alav ela ka'ove dinar zahav. When it comes to the mizbech hazav, it is only but a thin layer of gold. And meanwhile, kamashanim ein or shalotus bahem. And remember, there are hot coals placed right on the mizbech hazav daily. because the Ketores is burned on the Mizbeach Azov. And meanwhile, totally unaffected. Poshe Yisrael Shemalei and Mitzvahs Kerimon. Poshe Yisrael, whose bodies are filled with mitzvahs like a rimon, like a pomegranate. Dechsev kafalech rimon rakasech pasuk shir shirim atikra rakasech elori kanim shabach al achas kama v'kama. How much more so they are going to be protected from the Orshel Gehenim. Now Tosfos over here points out that second to last Tosfos on the Amud Poshe Yisrael, we saw Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that actually said just the opposite. That when it comes to Poshe Yisrael, when it comes to the sinners, the Jewish people, they're not going to be protected from Gehenim. So the right Nir Eli, the Lab of Poshe Yisrael begufan. So Tosfos over here draws a distinction between different types of Poshe Yisrael. Poshe Yisrael begufan, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. You remember there, what was the description of who is a Poshe Yisrael beguf? Sin with their body. Interesting. The Gemara there said, right, somebody doesn't put on tefillin. Okay, machlok is exactly what that means. Doesn't put on tefillin daily or not once in their lifetime. But the Gemara Rosh Hashanah says that when a Jew doesn't wear tefillin, so it's Poshe Yisrael begufan. So that Tosa says that's the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. The Hamin in Rosh Hashanah Poshe Yisrael begufan Gehenim kala veheim einam kalim. Ela bePoshe k'tzas. So over here, our Gemara is describing not a habitual and incorrigible sinner, but Tosa says over here just simply means okay, he's got a couple of flaws. I mean, I think we all do. But you know, in other words, it's somebody who can be described as a poshea. Umishim demasik lo laavram lechulu chutzmi. Right, and the and Tosfos goes on to describe the Avram is able to extract anybody from basically anyone from Gehenim except for a couple of select sinners who are incorrigible. So Tosfos points out, take a look at the end of Tosfos. So Tosfos over here says, we see this a couple places. Here Tosfos says that the person's not judged for more than 12 months, not a year. Comes out over here is that a distinction between different types of Poshe Yisrael. Our Gemara takes the optimistic view, which is that Poshe Yisrael also going to be unaffected by the Orshel Gehenim. Okay, it's a nice view, it's a good view. So Hajjalah Chomer Bekosh Slicha Maseches Chayiga. That is the end. Okay, that was a long journey through Seder Moed just to take just a little bit of stock in terms of what we've accomplished. It's unbelievable. Since the beginning of Shas, over 2 years ago, we've covered over 700, close to 800 Oblata Gemara. And we've, in Seder Moed, we covered 12 Masechtas, plus we also did Brachas from Seder Zrayim. So far, since the beginning of Shas, it's unbelievable. We've covered 13 Masechtas and 800 Oblata Gemara. Okay, this Daf Yomi was a good idea. I understand it's also got we could be critical about it as well, but just take a moment to realize that with the amazing things we're able to accomplish just by doing one daf a day. Okay, we'll.